Well, I want to move on to this statement. When under the influence of this threefold union, what's the threefold union? Protestantism, the Roman power, and spiritualism. When under the influence of this threefold union, our country shall repudiate every principle of its Constitution. I want to stop right there. To repudiate every principle of the Constitution, and friends, that is happening right now in a most remarkable way. And here's where we come to this verse, Revelation chapter 13, that our sister read a few moments ago. Revelation 13, 11. I beheld another beast coming up out of the earth, and he had two horns like a lamb, and he spake as a dragon. We want to take a look at this, speaking as a dragon, the voice of the dragon. And I'm so thankful for the spirit of prophecy that just cuts right to the chase and should settle any questions that we have about these prophetic symbols. I'm just going to read to you a little bit from Great Controversy. This is page 442. The lamb-like horns and dragon voice of the symbol point to a striking contradiction between the professions and the practice of the nation thus represented. And you know we're talking about the United States of America here. Now listen to this. The speaking of the nation. Now remember, we just read in Revelation 13, 11 that he spake as a... All right. The speaking of the nation is the action of its legislative and judicial authorities. Legislative and judicial authorities. This is where we should look if we're watching to see the beast with horns like a lamb speak as a dragon. And truly, friends, we are hearing the voice of the dragon come out of the legislative and judicial authorities of this nation. Now, in particular, we read in that statement in Testimonies, Volume 5, 451, that this would involve a repudiation of every principle of its constitution. By the way, this is why this beast, the beast with horns like a lamb that speaks like a dragon, is called the false prophet. It's a false prophet because there is a contradiction between its profession and its actions. There's a contradiction between those lamb-like horns, but the dragon voice. It is a lie. In fact, let me read on here. It says, the prediction that it will speak as a dragon and exercise all the power of the first beast plainly foretells a development of the spirit of intolerance and persecution that was manifested by the nations represented by the dragon and the leopard-like beast. And the statement that the beast with two horns causeth the earth and them which dwell therein to worship the first beast indicates that the authority of this nation is to be exercised in enforcing some observance, which will be an act of homage to the papacy. And we know that's talking about the Sunday legislation. But notice this. Such action would be directly contrary to the principles of this government, to the genius of its free institutions, to the direct and solemn avowals of the Declaration of Independence, and to the Constitution. This is the false prophet, the voice of the dragon, Satan, the father of lies. We're talking about a lie, the contradiction between its profession and its speaking, which is the legislative activity. Now let's take a look at this, and particularly as it relates to our Constitution. I became disturbed as I started to study this matter out that I wasn't very familiar with the American Constitution. That's pretty pathetic, but I don't know if anybody else can relate to that. You know, it seems that people who come here from other countries know our Constitution a lot better than we do. And you might say, well, is it really that important that we know it? Well, it turned out to be sort of handy for the Apostle Paul to know something about what it meant to be a Roman citizen, didn't it? Because he was about to get beat, and he said, hey, by the way, I'm a Roman citizen. And all of a sudden, they didn't want to beat him. Now, you know, I'm not saying you're going to get out of persecution by knowing that. But friends, it did tell me something. The Apostle Paul understood the Constitution of his nation. He understood the laws of his nation. We ought to understand these things too, if for no other reason, so that we can recognize the fulfillment of the prophecy that we're reading about, the repudiation of every principle of the Constitution. I want to take a look at several of the amendments in the Bill of Rights. You know, the Bill of Rights is generally considered the first 10 amendments. And I want to look at four of them. The first one is the Fourth Amendment. Here's what the Fourth Amendment says. The right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated, and no warrants shall issue but upon probable cause, supported by oath or affirmation, and particularly describing the place to be searched and the persons or things to be seized. Well, a little less than a year ago, May 1, 2004, the Washington Post reported something very interesting. For the first time, the number of secret surveillance warrants issued in federal terrorism and espionage cases last year exceed the total number of wiretaps approved in criminal cases nationwide. Now, what's the significance of that? There's evidence that the Justice Department and the FBI have shifted their focus from traditional criminals to suspected terrorists and their associates. And this is a historical milestone, really, because the majority of those warrants were issued under standards considerably lower than the probable cause requirement of the Fourth Amendment. In other words, there was not probable cause. The Fourth Amendment has been violated seriously now for quite some time. And you know, we're talking about the results of the USA Patriot Act and what has happened in the demise. But I want to show you some things that come from a couple other documents that I found quite disturbing. This is from the Attorney General's Guidelines on General Crimes, Racketeering Enterprise, and Terrorism Enterprise Investigations. This is a document that came from the Attorney General's office giving guidelines on how it should be decided when a terrorism investigation should be launched. And I'm quite interested in that because, as I'm sure you know, the definition for terrorism has been greatly broadened because of the USA Patriot Act. And friends, I believe that any of us could fall under the specter of questioning regarding that activity based on this broadened definition that the Patriot Act has brought into being. But let me read to you some things from this Attorney General's guidelines. The nature of the conduct engaged in by a terrorist, a potential terrorist, enterprise, will justify an inference that the standard is satisfied. In other words, a standard of passing a threshold where an investigation should be launched. Even if there are no known statements by participants that advocate or indicate planning for violence or other prohibited acts. In other words, there doesn't need to be evidence. And furthermore, this is disturbing. Let me read this to you. A group's activities and the statements of its members may properly be considered in conjunction with each other. You understand what that means? That a brother back there could say something, and a sister over here could say something, and I could say something, and in fact, wouldn't even have to be people that were in the same place. Seventh-day Adventists all around, a statement here and there could be quoted and put together to create a scenario that is not even really true and not even really accurate. I'll read it again now so you can hear it. A group's activities and the statements of its members may properly be considered in conjunction with each other. A combination of statements and activities may justify a determination that the threshold standard for a terrorism investigation is satisfied, even if the statements alone or the activities alone would not warrant such a determination. This is amazing. And I was also interested because there has been talk of intimidation. Acts of terror can be characterized as acts of intimidation under certain circumstances. And I become curious, what is intimidation? What would be designated intimidation? Could Seventh-day Adventists be accused of intimidation when we try and influence against the passing of a Sunday law? Well, there was an FBI intelligence bulletin. It's intelligence bulletin number 89, and it is a bulletin on current relevant terrorism information that talks about activities that are generally identifiable with terrorists. And what's interesting is they gave us an example of something that might be considered intimidation. You want to know what it is? Running a video camera. Here's what it says. Activists may use intimidation techniques such as videotaping. Pretty remarkable. There were some other things that they listed here to look out for, with activists, activists that could be dangerous. Activists often communicate with one another using cell phones or radios to coordinate activities or to update colleagues about ongoing events. Other types of media equipment, video cameras, photogenic equipment, audio tape recorders, microphone, and computer and radio equipment may be used for documenting potential cases of police brutality and for distributing of information over the internet. Well, we're living in a time of scrutiny, aren't we? But what it really comes down to is all of this is leading to violations of our Fourth Amendment rights. Now, I want to share with you a statement from Judge Andrew Napolitano in his book, Constitutional Chaos. And what's interesting now is you know that mainstream journalists on both sides of the political fence, liberals and conservatives, mainstream journalists now are beginning to say things that a few years ago would have been considered radical and fringe in response to what's been happening under the Patriot Act and some of these other things we're talking about. But on December 13 of 2003, something interesting happened. Do you remember this? December 13, 2003? Well, Saddam Hussein was captured. And while everybody was looking and watching the pictures of a physical examination and checking his hair for lice and all the rest of it, the Intelligence Authorization Act went into effect. Here is what Andrew Napolitano, a judge, had to say about that. On Saturday afternoon, December 13, 2003, the right to privacy suffered another serious blow. On that day, the Intelligence Authorization Act for fiscal year 2004 was signed into law. This statute expands the term financial institution so as to now include travel agencies, car dealers, casinos, hotels, real estate and insurance agents, and lawyers, newsstands, pawnbrokers. Even the U.S. Post Office is now considered a financial institution. Now, why is that significant? Because the Intelligence Authorization Act gave new freedoms to pulling information from financial institutions. And once again, we're finding a violation of our Fourth Amendment rights. Now, here's what Judge Napolitano said. Now, without you knowing it, the Justice Department, whose lawyers and agents have sworn to uphold the Constitution, can easily subvert it by learning where you traveled, what you spent, what you ate, what you paid to finance your car and your house, what you confided to your lawyer and insurance and real estate agents, what periodicals you read. And they can do all this without having to demonstrate any evidence or even suspicion of criminal activity on your part. And Judge Napolitano ended by saying this: the government can now, for the first time in American history, without obtaining the approval of a court, read your mail before you do and prosecute you on the basis of what it reads. Well, friends, this is just a fulfillment of the prophecy we've been studying this morning, isn't it? It shouldn't necessarily surprise us, but it ought to alarm us. Now, I want to move on and look at the Fifth Amendment and the Sixth Amendment. Here's the Fifth Amendment. No person shall be held to answer for a capital or otherwise infamous crime unless on a presentment or indictment of a grand jury, except in cases arising in the land or naval forces or in the militia when in actual service in time of war or public danger. Nor shall any person be subject for the same offense to be twice put in jeopardy of life or limb. Nor shall be compelled in any criminal case to be a witness against himself, nor be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law. Nor shall private property be taken for public use without just compensation. Here's the Sixth Amendment. In all criminal prosecutions, the accused shall enjoy the right to a speedy and public trial by an impartial jury of the state and district wherein the crime shall have been committed, which district shall have been previously ascertained by law, and to be informed of the nature and cause of the accusations, to be confronted with the witnesses against him, to have compulsory process for obtaining witness in his favor, and to have the assistance of counsel for his defense. And friend, these amendments to the Constitution have been thrown out the window just in the last few years, post 9/11. And I think of some cases, you I'm sure remember the case of Yasir Issam Hamdi, who was held incommunicado. In fact, there was also Jose Padilla. He couldn't communicate with anybody outside of his private little cell there for more than 1.5 years. The amazing thing here is we're talking about United States citizens who lost their rights simply by being deemed enemy combatants. That's all that has to be said now. And you don't have the protections of the Constitution. Now, what did we read? When we see this threefold union, we already see the threefold union. When we see it exerting its influence to repudiate every principle of the Constitution as a Protestant and Republican government, what do we know? Then may we know that the time has come for the marvelous working of Satan and that the end is near. Friends, we're there. We are there. But I'm going to rush ahead to the First Amendment. Because I was even thinking, well, you know, we still have First Amendment protection. And it is true that here we are worshiping freely today. You know, the situation could be a lot different. But there was a survey taken that is startling. It was done by the First Amendment Center. It's actually an organization dedicated to informing Americans about the First Amendment. And what they found in polling Americans is pretty startling. 49% of those who were polled, by the way, this was in 2002, 49% said the First Amendment gives us too much freedom. Now, let me read the First Amendment again here. Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion, or prohibiting the free exercise thereof, or abridging the freedom of speech, or of the press, or the right of the people peaceably to assemble, and to petition the government for a redress of grievances. 49% of Americans who were polled said that the First Amendment gives us too much freedom. Now, there was only one comforting thing in this survey to me, and that is that only 18% of those surveyed knew that freedom of religion was a First Amendment right. Now, I mean, that's pathetic, but it was comforting to me because perhaps if more of them knew, maybe they wouldn't have said that the First Amendment gives us too much freedom. But nevertheless, this is the context that we're in now. But as I said, I thought that we're still enjoying full First Amendment freedoms right now. Until I heard the story of the Lackawanna Six. Have you heard the story of the Lackawanna Six? Lackawanna is a place in New York State. July of 2003, the U.S. Department of Justice had a celebration and gave out honors and praises to federal agents and lawyers involved in the prosecution of the Lackawanna Six. Who were they? They were all Arab Americans, five of them born in the U.S. And they were charged in federal court in the Western District of New York with providing aid and support to a terrorist group prior to September 11. Now, here's the thing about the Lackawanna Six that's so significant. They were not charged with engaging in war against the United States like John Walker Lynn. They were not arrested out in a battlefield somewhere, like the 60 prisoners of war that were released from Guantanamo Bay some time back. They were not charged with causing or planning harm. You know what the charge was? Listening to Muslim clerics. Their crime was listening to Muslim preachers. And it's true that in the case of one of them, he listened to Osama bin Laden at a camp in Afghanistan. Nevertheless, the crime was listening. Friend, this is an incredible violation of First Amendment rights. Now, what's amazing is, at first, the court rejected the argument out of hand and said, you know, this is ridiculous. You've got to produce evidence. But the federal agents, government lawyers, met with the six young men and implicitly threatened them during plea negotiations that if they did not plead guilty, if they did not speak up as the government wanted them to, if they did not cooperate in their own prosecution, if they insisted on due process rights, that the government would declare them to be enemy combatants. Now you say, how can such a thing happen? It did happen, and it's well documented. Now, here is what Judge Napolitano said about this. There is no reported case in American history in which a court allowed a defendant to be told that his insistence on due process would result not on prosecution and conviction, but in punishment without trial. Now, the question is asked, why did the lawyers go along with this? Why did the lawyers for the six young men allow this to happen? Let their clients plead guilty and accept 6 to 9 year jail terms rather than fight it. Here's what Judge Napolitano says. Here's why the lawyers of the Lackawanna Six went along with it. Because they knew that the government has suspended rights before and has gotten away with it. They knew that the president had actually declared three people to be enemy combatants and had kept them locked up without charges and away from their own lawyers. And before the Supreme Court stepped in, he appeared to be getting away with it. Friends, we're living in an amazing time, aren't we?
Yes.
It's time to wake up. This statement that we began with is being fulfilled right before our very eyes. Let me read it to you again. When Protestantism shall stretch her hand across the gulf to grasp the hand of the Roman power, when she shall reach over the abyss to clasp hands with spiritualism, when under the influence of this threefold union our country shall repudiate every principle of its constitution as a Protestant and Republican government and shall make provision for the propagation of papal falsehoods and delusions, then we may know that the time has come for the marvelous working of Satan and that the end is near. Now you say, but wait a minute. There's still the Sunday law. That's right, friend. But do you see the armies approaching? Must we wait for the Sunday law until we'll take action? It is time now to recognize the lateness of the hour.